You're listening to the Golf Unfiltered Podcast, your source for in-depth interviews with the biggest names, brands, and personalities in golf. Our mission? To keep you informed and help you enjoy the game even more. And now, the owner and host of the Golf Unfiltered Podcast, Adam Fonseca.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Golf Unfiltered Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Adam from golfunfiltered.com. Follow us all over social media at Golf Unfiltered, and you can send us an email, golfunfiltered@gmail.com. This is episode 204, folks, and today we welcome Mr. Tomo Bysted from TaylorMade Golf to talk a little bit about the Gapper hybrids that they have been. They're on the market now for, I believe, about 8 months, and so Tomo and I go into a lot of detail about those clubs. But before I go any further, I have to say hello to all our friends that help make the podcast possible, including our friends over at thehackersparadise.com. Had the opportunity to go out to dinner with JB and his wife Morgan the other day, as well as our good friend Michael Verska, who's been on the podcast a couple times. Hello to all of you who are listening to this episode on the Golf Unfiltered Podcast RSS feed or the THP feed, because we are simulcast on both networks. Hello to our friends over at Cleveland and Strixon Golf. As you guys know, I am playing their equipment throughout the year. Haven't had the chance to go out as of late. It's been a couple weeks now. We've gotten a ton of rain in the Chicagoland area. Last week, actually, as of the time of this recording, we had about 6 inches of rain. My old house and my old basement did not like that very much. We have to get that taken care of. Hello to our friends as well over to budgetgolf.com. Go out and check out all the great deals they have every single day on budgetgolf.com. Hello to the person who just honked outside my window. Sorry about that. Budget Golf and the Hackers Paradise just had a fantastic event. They do this every year for the past 3 years now, I believe, where two lucky contestants who are forum members over at the Hackers Paradise get to go to the Budget Golf Warehouse in Joliet. They get to run around like mad men in this case. And if you remember the old Supermarket Sweep game show, basically they do a very similar game show over in that warehouse in Joliet, Illinois. And they have the opportunity to just basically grab a bunch of stuff off this massive warehouse, off the shelves in this massive warehouse. And there's a winner, ultimately, and this guy gets to keep everything. So you go out to hackersparadise.com and check out the live feed from that. There's a recording up there now. You're going to be able to check out the forums as well. I feel like I'm jumping around all over the place here, but it's just been an exciting week for Budget Golf and the Hackers Paradise. And it was great to talk to JB a little bit about that over at dinner. Also, before we get to today's episode with Tomo, I also want to talk a little bit about just some other stuff that's going on in the golf atmosphere here, and I feel like I haven't done that enough just to kind of share a couple opinions on a few things that are going on. One thing I did want to talk a little bit about was I understand that PXG actually just came out with a new set of irons. I'm going to make sure I get the name right here. Forgive me. It's their new 0211 irons. And what's interesting about these irons is if you were to go to, I'm actually looking at Forbes' website right now. If you look at these irons, you'll notice two things. One, the most obvious, is that these irons do not have the trademark screw weights around the perimeter of the club head. The other thing you're probably going to notice is they look really damn similar to a few Ping models that are out there. There's no mistake that there's similarities between the two. I'm not saying one is copying the other. I know I saw a few people on social making that claim. That's just not the case. What you do know, though, is that if you remember from the history of the PXG as a company, a few Ping engineers actually went over to PXG, or I guess I should say PXG grabbed a few Ping engineers, and they work for the company now. And so there might be a little correlation there. I'm sure that there is, and people who are much smarter at this than I am could probably chime in on that. But what's also interesting about this is the cost of these new 0211 irons. They're going to run for a set of 8 irons around $1,600. Still a little bit on the high side for irons, but certainly nothing like the $3,000 that you have to pay, or somewhere in that ballpark, for the previous versions set out by PXG. Why are they doing that? Well, as we were talking on social not too long ago, they want to grab a little bit of the market share for irons in the industry. Now, when PXG first came out, Bob Parsons, guy that helped start GoDaddy, a few other companies, head honcho over at PXG, made no qualms about what he was doing and what demographic he wanted to reach out to. And he wanted to be viewed, or he wanted PXG to be viewed, as a luxury brand. He made no secret out of that. People had different opinions on whether or not that was a good idea, myself included. I know, and we all know, that golf typically caters to a specific demographic. I'm not saying anything new here. For the most part, in order to play the game, you need to make a certain amount of money. You need to have some certain socioeconomic status. And unfortunately, even in some areas of the country still, you need to even be possibly be a particular gender and color in order to get onto a golf course. Thankfully, that is the number of courses like that are diminishing considerably. As it pertains to what types of products you want to sell, and let's just talk about any industry, not just golf. Clearly, there are always going to be high-end versions of whatever product you're selling, all the way down to the lower-end entry-level products. Think about it in terms of cars, basically any product you can think of. With golf, this is certainly not something that's new. There are very high-end brands all over the place. That doesn't mean that I understand it anymore. And that's especially true from a sustainability standpoint. Now, clearly, Bob Parsons has a lot of cash. that's another non-secret. And when I posed this question on social media, whether or not that PXG is sustainable, that's all I wrote. I got some mixed reaction from that. People tend to go one way or the other. There's really no gray area or middle ground when it comes to PXG. A couple of replies that I got that I found to be pretty funny and by all means accurate was that they're going to be sustainable as long as Bob Parsons wants them to be sustainable. That's probably true. But a good handful of other responses, I would say actually the majority of responses, said, you know what, no, they're probably not very sustainable. And this move to kind of filter back down into the major demographic in terms of cash available to grab some of that market share, I think that's telling us a little bit something. I don't know if the original model was working as well as it was originally intended to work, or at least what they expected. Now, I'm sure somebody listening to this is going to send me an email or something on social to let me know, hey, you know, well, you haven't seen the figures or the sales figures for PXG. You're right, I haven't. What I am seeing, though, is behaviors like a driver not too long ago that came out that was a lower price driver, maybe trying to grab some of that market share, and now the 0211 irons. So I want to talk a little bit more about this as well. This goes into even last week's conversation, at least the intro, when we were talking a little bit more about just, you know, marketing and whether or not we feel that marketing is truthful in golf. This tends to continue to come up over and over again, at least in the emails I receive and people on social. So let me know your thoughts on that as well. Let me know what you think about this whole element of higher end priced clubs, because again, PXG is not the only brand that does that. There are other very well-known brands that have very high-end stuff. Let me know what you think about that. You know how to reach out to us on social at golfunfiltered. golfunfiltered@gmail.com is the email address. All right. Now we're getting back to our guest for today, Mr. Tomo Biestad. He is from TaylorMade Golf. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Gapper hybrids. We're going to talk about how they compare to other hybrids on the market. We're going to talk about whether or not you need one in your bag, and I think after listening to today's conversation, you're probably going to give it some thought. So sit back, relax. We'll be right back after a short break.
Hi, this is Bill Hobson from the Four Golfers Network podcast. And as you and I enjoy this episode of Golf Unfiltered with my friend Adam, I'm reminded of an indisputable reality. We, as golfers, are nuts. We chase a small ball around the planet, spending thousands of dollars in the effort to get that ball into a tiny hole. We then yell at the ball and curse it when it doesn't listen, even though it can't listen, it's a ball. This insanity is all part of the magic of the game, and it's what we celebrate on the Four Golfers Network podcast every Monday when a fresh episode comes your way on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeart, you know, all the places. So after you finish listening to Adam today, I'd love to have you check out the Four Golfers Network podcast, that's F-O-R-E, where we celebrate the game with top name guests and an exploration of the things about golf that both drive us crazy and bring us back for more.
I stink! The ball is just sitting there and I can't hit it.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. As I mentioned at the top of the show, very excited to welcome Mr. Tomo Bystedt. He is the Senior Director of Product Creation over at TaylorMade Golf. Tomo, thanks for taking some time on your busy schedule to talk a little bit about the Gapper that we're going to get into today.
Absolutely, Adam. It's great, great to be on the show.
So for the listeners who might not be familiar with your name, why don't you give us a little bit of background on your years at TaylorMade, what you do out there, and how you got involved with the company?
Yeah, so, you know, I've been a golfer since I was a kid, probably like a lot of the guys in the Hacks Paradise. You know, we played probably with our dads or our granddads, and that's kind of how I got into the game as well. And, you know, it was always a hobby since I was about 10 or 12. And so played the game, never really had any, you know, intentions of getting into it as a job. And obviously when you go to career fairs and stuff at college, that's not really an option to go into golf. So you kind of look at other jobs, and I got lucky, honestly. You know, I actually just bumped into some people at a golf tournament that worked in the golf industry, and kind of one thing led to another. And before I knew it, I was working at Acushnet. Actually, it was my first job in golf.
Mm-hmm.
And worked there from 2004 to 2006, and I was in Japan, actually. I've lived all over the world, so kind of grew up in Europe and lived in Japan and other places. But I worked in Japan for a couple of years, got my first break at TaylorMade, got into TaylorMade in 2006. Seems like a long time ago. and, yeah, that's kind of aging me right there. But, yeah, so I've been with TaylorMade now for you know, almost 14 years. It's been a great ride. Obviously, my first job was actually in Australia. So I was doing product and marketing there for a couple of years as my first gig with TaylorMade. And that was really cool. I had to learn a new brand, had to learn a new market. Actually, I had to learn a new category because I was also doing apparel and footwear back in those days. And I had to learn kind of how to sell those and how to market those products. And then end up living in Hong Kong and serving the Asia market for TaylorMade equipment for about 5 years until about 2013. And mm-hmm. then in 2013, I finally got kind of the call up to come work at the headquarters here in Carlsbad. And I had great relationships with the whole product creation crew and the R&D crew here. And I'd kind of been nagging them for a job over here because I wanted to get into the role of making products, right? That was mm-hmm. ultimately my goal. And so one thing led to another. I got an opportunity to start working in irons back in 2013. And really, so sort of like my first product that I worked on was the SLDR iron that I worked on, a product that probably a lot of you guys have heard of and played, which is the Tour Preferred UDI.
Oh, yeah.
the UDI was actually kind of my first start to finish. It was a bit of a skunkworks project at the time, where it was a little bit out of the mainstream, and I was kind of working just with one engineer, and we were kind of doing our own thing, and it was really fun. And still to this day, it's one of those products that I think came out really awesome, and, mm-hmm. and again, still played on tour by a lot of guys. So but yeah, through the irons role, I worked on a lot of great irons, worked on all the RSI products. I think the one that most people will know me for is working on the P790.
Yep.
That was kind of I would say the biggest breakthrough of my career in irons was working on that product in terms of just exceeding expectations and mm-hmm. putting together a package. I think that was pretty groundbreaking for the industry. So that was cool. And then pretty much right after I finished P790, ended up getting an opportunity to head up the Metalwoods team. So currently working on Metalwoods. So I've been working on that for about a year and a half, a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously M5 and 6 and Gapper, just launched the mini driver as well, the original one. So it's been fun, and obviously now working on future products. So that's kind of my journey in a nutshell.
You've been a busy guy. You've seen a lot of things. You've done a lot. You've been a lot of places, and it's great to hear too. And a lot of the products that you just named in your career, you know, obviously a lot of players listening to this have them in their bag. I've had the opportunity to try many of them, and they're all fantastic. But what's interesting is you transitioned from irons to metalwoods, and that just segues really nicely because I'm a professional, Tomo. I could segue into this conversation about the Gapper. And so now the Gapper's been around for, it's been released for a little while now, but what I really would like to talk to you a little bit about is just, pun intended, where it fits in the golf bag. And my understanding, let me know if I'm wrong, is that, as the name implies, it literally fills the gap between your longest iron and your shortest metal wood.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, the Gapper product, you know, when people ask sort of where it came from, and we have been talking about kind of a reinvention of this category, I would say, for more than 3 years, maybe 4 years already ago. We started talking about this here at TaylorMade, we started seeing trends both in the marketplace with consumers and also out on tour with, you know, the traditional hybrid was kind of losing some steam. And part of it was there was a little bit of a lack of innovation in that category. You know, if you think about hybrids, how they were in sort of 2016, 2015, and then compare those hybrids that were around in 2007, 2008, they weren't really that different. I mean, it's really the same kind of idea, just kind of recycled with new names. And we felt like innovation had moved so far in other categories, with drivers, fairways, with irons, and why wasn't kind of innovation taking over the hybrid and rescue space? So we started looking at that, and what we noticed was part of the reason was with that kind of evolution of iron technology and these high CUR faces, these low CG multi-material constructions, the iron performance was just leapfrogging the performance of rescues in terms of distance, accuracy, but also even how easy they were to hit, right?
Mm-hmm,
so
right.
Seeing that shift, especially, and we talked about UDI a little bit, the UDI product was one of those products where people were like, well, I can hit this as far as a rescue, and I can swing it like an iron, so I really am not losing anything by playing this, and maybe the only thing you gave up maybe was it's not as good out of the rough, potentially, but that was, you know, a trade-off that a lot of people were willing to make, and because of that, I think a lot of tour players started switching out of traditional hybrids into these kind of driving irons, long iron type clubs. And
right.
So that really, I would say, was the birth of that. And then, the part that you alluded to, which was kind of this idea that there's a gap in the bag. One thing we'd seen, obviously, was that, you know, people were struggling with long irons. That's not news to anyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Long irons is hard to hit in general.
Right.
And then I think high-lofted fairways can be good for some players. They're typically a little harder to control from a distance control standpoint. If you try to hit into a green, you know, how accurately can you really predict your 7-wood or your 9-wood distance? It's kind of hard to do for a lot of players. I know I can't hit one at all. And so having clubs that were sort of in this in-between space is good. And I think, again, those traditional hybrids is an option, obviously, but they're pretty one-dimensional. It's like you either like that kind of shape and how they perform or you don't, you know. And
right. There
really wasn't any other option. So that's really how the Gapper idea got started, of offering a golfer different ways of filling that gap in the bag of, do you like more like an iron shape? Do you like more like a rescue hybrid shape? Somewhere in between, like a mid? And also trajectory-wise, or are you more of a low trajectory? You like to hit it off the tee, maybe a little more penetrating? Or do you like to get it up in the air and try to land soft on the green? So there was a lot of those kinds of thoughts that led to the creation of Gapper.
And that actually rings true to me, because I am one of those people that prefer the look of an iron shape compared to a hybrid. And as you touched on, Tomo, Gapper comes in three different head shapes, if I understand correctly. And they are basically taking into account not only the preference from a appearance standpoint, but also, as you pointed out, the trajectory. Could you talk a little bit about those options?
Yeah. So, you know, we if you kind of look at the from kind of low to high and look at that progression, the low product is really a driving iron.
Mm-hmm.
And it's we wanted to kind of bring in the idea of, you know, something that you could swing just like an iron. You can hit down the ball. You kind of have that typical iron swing. You can take a divot with this club. But it should have some of the performance elements of really more of a hybrid type club, meaning hollow body construction, really low CG, a little shallower face profile, a little wider sole than a typical iron, those kinds of things to make it a little bit easier to play. But still, when you look at it from the dress position, it should look really traditional, not a lot of offset. If you've seen that club, it's pretty low offset. And that's the club that I would say we've had most success with on tour, with guys putting it in play on courses where they need accuracy off the tee and want to hit the ball low, such as at the Open Championship last year when we had, I believe we had 11 of those in play at that event. So we definitely, you know, that's kind of the low. And then you go all the way to the high, you get the other side of the spectrum. That's really more typical hybrid player. Now we're adding a couple of key technologies in here. We're adding, first of all, our loft sleeve system. So the FCT, we've called it in the past, which is essentially a way to adjust your loft on the club and also the lie angle. So gives people some options there. Do you want to hit a little higher? Maybe fine-tune your gaps. You know, maybe your three hybrid goes a little bit too far. Your four is a little too short. Somewhere in between, you can do that. Things like that. And more traditional hybrid shape. Again, we're creating these all to be super fast COR. We're trying to make them as low CG as we possibly can to make them easy to hit off the deck, easy to hit off bad lies. And then really, I would say the final piece that we wanted to do was give them more of an iron solid, like kind of a solid iron feel. So we use speed foam that we use in the P790s on all these clubs to give it that really solid feel that also enables us to go a little thinner on the faces to get all that ball speed out of it. So that was kind of the bookends of the gapper. And then finally in the mid, we kind of took best of both worlds. We made that kind of lower profile, slightly bigger head profile of the dress from the high. We took those elements, and then we married into a club that actually had offset with a flat face, no bulge and roll, and made it into an iron. Again, that you could swing like an iron, but would give you more of a hybrid type performance. And so that club, I would say, has been I would say the cult favorite of the three clubs. One of the clubs that we weren't sure how it was going to sell. The other two, I think, kind of self-categorized themselves into kind of better players for the low and just more the everyday player for the high. This mid was kind of this unknown. And what's been really cool is just seeing it take off. And that's done really well for us. And we've actually had a bunch in play on tour as well. So that's been really great to see.
That's really interesting, and I know that speed foam was a big part of, you know, getting the ball speeds up in all three of these unique shapes that you've got with the gapper, but when you say that the mid was kind of the surprise of the three, what has been some of the feedback that you've received on that mid option?
Yeah, so I think, you know, one of the nice things about the mid is when you're fitting somebody into a set of irons, and I've talked to a lot of fitters about this, both within the TaylorMade team and also external fitters from, you know, guys from some of these fitting specialists like at Cool Clubs or Club Champion, at True Spec Golf, and just ask those guys of, you know, what's working, what's not working, and I, you know, because we want to learn too. We want to make better products in the future, so we want to get as much feedback as we can. And one of the things I've heard from a lot of people is that the mid is a fantastic fitting club because it's one of those clubs where you get a player in the nets and you're hitting, you're trying to fit, and you start realizing that, you know, after a 5-iron, they really can't make consistent contact. They can't hit the ball high enough. And you can actually build a mid in a few different ways. You can build it like a traditional hybrid length, which is sort of what it's built for, or you can go a little shorter and build it more like an iron. And then you have an option to make it more upright using the loft sleeve. So, you know, it's been great to see, you know, different people use it in different ways. And out on tour, we had a couple of guys use it, in the last few weeks as well. So it's kind of nice to see it going out there. And I would say the feedback we've had on performance is, first of all, it's really easy to play. Mm-hmm. It goes really high, and it's long. I mean, one of the things that surprised people is that they can hit it as far as any kind of wood-style hybrid, even though it comes with a little shorter shaft, potentially. So you don't sacrifice in distance by kind of getting that extra control. And a lot of people, especially on the more amateur side of the spectrum, struggle with having command of a lot of different types of swings, right? You have a driver swing, you have an iron swing, you might have a fairway swing, but then you have this third swing for the hybrids or, you know, whatever, fourth swing.
Right.
That's really hard for a lot of people. So being able to put a club in the bag there that really is just an extension of your iron set that gives you kind of hybrid-like performance is really what's been successful for this product.
And, you know, you just touched on something that's so important that I think listeners really need to pay attention to is that the different types of swings that could live within your golf bag. You know, we've only got, you know, the 14 clubs or 13 minus the putter, of course. And you have to make sure that, you know, why would you make the game more difficult for yourself, you know? So you definitely want to have that extension. I like the way that you put that. You know, what's interesting, Tomo, is, you know, I'm sure that this happens a lot on tour where guys will go ahead and switch in and out different gappers, for example, depending on the conditions and the courses they're going to play. Do you see that among amateur players too?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, probably not as much because people probably don't have, you know, the money just to buy a bunch of different clubs that they would play occasionally.
Sure.
But when I talk to people here at TaylorMade who are really avid players, there's a lot of great players here. And, you know, if you're a scratch golfer, you're probably the 40th best player at TaylorMade. But it's a lot of great players here. But talking to a lot of those guys and asking them about how they're using different clubs, and especially with gapper, what's interesting is a lot of them have multiple gappers in the back and different ones, right? So some of them have a three in the mid and a three in the high and a four in the mid, for example. So one they use more as a traditional hybrid, maybe more of a tee club. The other one is more, again, like an iron. And then for different courses, the low comes out on courses where they need to use it more off the tee, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely seeing that more and more. And I think, but more importantly, I think, a lot of people have big gaps between their shortest metalwood and their longest playable iron. And I would say for a lot of people, that's the six iron, maybe the five iron. Usually people don't hit irons longer than that very well. Mm-hmm. So you potentially have a gap between, a six iron and let's call it a three wood or a five wood, or you could have probably a couple of gappers, right? You could have a three gapper and a four gapper, or a two and a four, or a two and a three. And there's a lot of options there. And I've seen that work for a lot of people where they choose different ones. Again, depending on the use case.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I know that the gappers, depending on whichever preference you like, high, medium, or low, come in different lofts. For example, the high comes in at least four different lofts. The mid and low come in three each. Maybe a misconception that perhaps we can clarify for the listeners is, one thing I've heard is that clubs like the gapper and others are almost, I don't know the right word to use here, but they're almost making a seven wood or a five wood beginning to become more obsolete. Is there any truth to that in your mind, or is there still room for those types of clubs, and it just completely depends on the golfer?
I would say it really depends on the golfer. Right? I've seen a lot of people who struggle with high-loft fairways, but I've also seen players that can use them very successfully. And a lot of, especially skilled golfers with slower swing speeds, like seniors, some ladies as well. Mm-hmm. Certainly, if you look on the LPGA Tour, there's a lot of seven woods out there. There's a lot of six hybrids. I mean, and those ladies can hit the ball pretty far. I mean, they're mm-hmm. like relative to us, they're long hitters. And I would say, so it's not really necessarily a golfer skill level thing, but I would say most people don't have, I would say, the right swing to automatically just hit a high loft of fairway really well. I think it's something you have to practice. And if you hit it well, I think it's one of the easier clubs to hit because you kind of just sweep it off the ground. It has really low CG. It kind of gets the ball in the air really easily. But it's more often than not, it's a control issue. And I think, and that's why you don't see a lot of seven woods on the PGA Tour. I don't think most tour players can control that club very well distance wise and even directionally.
Right.
Compared to a longer iron. So, and that's kind of the gap we're trying to bridge here a little bit is try to get the benefits of a high loft of fairway, which is the higher launch, the ball speed, the ease of play, but put it in a format that you're going to be more comfortable with from a swing standpoint and just looking down at the club, frankly, because again, high loft of fairways, if you're not used to playing one, they look a little bit odd, right? The head is almost circular. It's a lot of loft, big belly on the leading edge, head is really flat. So that's, for some people that's a comfort factor too, that it looks like you can get the ball in the air. But for some people, it's also maybe not something that you would be comfortable hitting off a tee.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that I think you hit the nail on the head there. It definitely is a preference when you look down at a dress, whether or not I expect a tee to be under that large fairway wood. And I know that there's all sorts of different profiles that are available. But one thing that's also interesting, especially in the high side of the gapper line, is the loft, the higher lofts. So like the 28 degree loft, for example. I know that a lot of players are going down that end of the spectrum as well, which you alluded to. And so it's almost safe to say that you can go all the way to your 6-iron, perhaps, depending on whatever you think is going to work best for your game. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, go rewind 5-6 years, people weren't comfortable ditching their 6-iron for a hybrid. But nowadays, I think that's more acceptable. And I think having your first iron be a 7 is not that weird, honestly. And I would say, especially if you go to Asia, that's already happening over there. A lot of the sets sold are start with a 6 or a 7 iron. So it's definitely something that people are getting more used to. And I think people are pragmatic, right? They just want whatever's best and easiest to play. They don't necessarily care what it looks like or, you know, what it says on the bottom of the club. It's just, oh, I can hit this one more consistently, have better rate of success with this club than this other club. And so we've definitely seen that trend. I mean, when we started offering hybrids and the rescues kind of back in the early 2000s, we had a kind of a 3 and a 2, and then we had a 2, 3, and a 4, and then a 5 crept in somewhere in 2006, 2007-ish. You know, and now we have it up to a 7, and obviously in the market there's even higher loss than that. But you can see the trend is that that's where it's heading. It's people are going and they're playing whatever is going to be the easiest and best thing to play. And performance speaks for itself.
Yeah, and that is interesting too. I mean, as somebody like yourself who's lived in different areas of the globe, knowing the different mentalities and perceptions even of golfers, you had just mentioned that in Asia it's a little bit more common to have a wider range of hybrids before you get to, you know, the first iron.
Yeah.
And I imagine that we're seeing that more on tour as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, I would say the tour guys are a little bit of a funny breed as well, because some of them are also very traditional, right? They
sure.
play muscle backs. They have their old traditional set and they don't really want to change a lot of things. But they're players who are more willing to experiment, I should say. Coincidentally enough, like the Korean guys, like remember when Wai Yang first came out on tour and he had success, obviously won the PGA. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things that I took away from him was I believe he had 4 hybrids in the bag most events. He had a 2 through a 6, or a 2 through a 5, depending on the event. But, you know, I watched him play events where he'd have 175 yards into the green and he would chip a little 6 hybrid in there. And it was wild, you know, and you see these other tour players hit like, you know, hard 7 irons or something like that under those same holes, or 6 irons or 8 irons or whatever. And that's a good example of a play, you know, when players are kind of open to trying new things, they might find solutions that are better. And I think that's a little bit what's happening more with the LPGA Tour is players on that tour are a little bit more open to trying different things that maybe work better for them. It's interesting. I think golfers in general now, they have so much access to obviously data, launch monitor information, club fittings, things like that, that if something performs better, you're going to choose it. And I think the stigma of having higher loss with hybrids, things like that, is probably going away.
Yeah, that's probably a good thing. I know that I've benefited from them certainly in my game as well. So it's definitely something to consider, listeners, if you're in the market for something to kind of fill that gap, as we've been talking about here. And listeners, once again, we're talking with Mr. Tomo Bystedt. He's the Senior Director of Product Creation over at TaylorMade. Tomo, I have to ask you at least one question about, you know, the guy that just won at Augusta. You're the first person I've spoken to from TaylorMade since Tiger Woods won. I imagine you guys were going crazy. Walk me through just some of the emotions that you were feeling when you were watching Tiger Woods bring home his green jacket.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's hard to explain because, you know, my personal journey through golf and, you know, with Tiger, I mean, he came along at a time when I honestly, like, I wouldn't say I quit the game, but I was heading out. I was like finishing college and I was kind of burnt out, wasn't playing well. And then, you know, I'm watching the 97 Masters and it was like, who is this kid? Like, it was like, he just changed the face of golf right there, you know? And then I was just drawn to everything Tiger ever since that time. And obviously, it's been a real tumultuous journey along the way. He had those glory years in the early 2000s, played well, had multiple swing reconstructions, And then, you know, he was out of the game 2009, 10, came back in 12, 13, played pretty good, won some events. But there was always this feeling of like, you know, the old days are gone. You know, in the back of our minds, it was probably that we'd seen the best of Tiger. And so to see him come back, and obviously it wasn't like an overnight thing because last year he had a great year. He won the tour championship. So it was like the signs were there that obviously he was, you know, on a resurgent form, but the whole Masters thing was almost surreal because I think if you said, you know, if Tiger wins one more event in his life, what would you want it to be? It would be the Masters, obviously. Right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So it was almost like the stars aligned that we, and as the week wore on, we were like, yeah, it's looking like it, but you always think something's going to happen, you know, whatever. And somebody's going to come out of nowhere and pull a Charles Schwartz on him and birdie the last four holes or something. And it's like, it was close, whatever. But the fact that he pulled it off and just the whole build up to, because once he got to 17T, it was like, he's got this, you know, he's going to win this tournament. And obviously seeing, just what happened on the green in 18 and his celebration and then with his kids and his mom and everything.
Yeah.
And I think honestly, the way that Jim and Faldo handled it in the booth as well was amazing. They didn't say anything for 2 minutes and they just let the whole thing play. It was almost like a spiritual thing for a lot of golf fans, including myself. And so, you know, whether you're working telling me or not, I don't think it made any difference. Like we, as golf fans, were just incredibly excited for a real seminal moment in golf. And so that was, you know, and I think we all walked in here Monday, you know, high-fiving each other and there's a lot of just celebration in general. But I think we were just happy for Tiger and the game of golf and, you know, whatever benefit we got out of it as a brand, that was great and everything, but that's not why we were excited about Tiger winning.
You know, and it's just, I think you, again, said it very well. I mean, as golf fans, my story is very similar to yours in terms of just getting involved in the game. And this is a guy that you and I grew up watching. We're able to see him do it again. And as I know you're being modest, but as we all know, Tiger Woods is a tinkerer with his equipment. And he has basically the pick of the litter when it comes to whatever he wanted to play. And he chose TaylorMade. And so, you know, not to be too heavy handed here, but, you know, thanks for getting him back on track. So you guys did it. And, you know, just thanks a lot for, you know, from golf fans everywhere, especially the people listening to this. It was a treat that we never thought we'd see again. And you guys were there to help him out.
Yeah. No, thanks. I mean, honestly, it was whenever you work with tour players, and I've spent a lot of time working with tour players over the years, spent a lot of time with Dustin and Jason and a little bit with Rory now more recently as well. And Justin Rose back in the day. And whenever you see a guy's bag and you see a club that you worked on, that you designed in the guy's bag, it just fills you with a lot of pride. You're like, man, like he could play any clubs and he's playing the club that I worked on. It's a great feeling. You know, as a team here, we feel a lot of pride in that. But Tiger is like a whole nother level. You know, he the scrutiny that he has on every single minutiae of his equipment is incredible. And his level of feel and picking little differences up in the clubs is obviously second to none. I mean, that's been well documented over the years. But, you know, being able to work with him and seeing him hit the M5 driver like he did at Augusta was honestly so awesome. You know, that's a club that we worked on. We blood, sweat, and tears from the whole team here. And how it all came together and seeing him hit draws with it, hit fades with it, and just being so in control of his driving game, which has not always been his strength. And obviously his irons was another thing that, I mean, let's be honest, we got pretty lucky that we launched the iron that week that he won with it. That was pretty cool coincidence, right? We couldn't have scripted that any better.
Right.
But that was a project that I worked on before I even moved to Mellow. I mean, that we've been working on irons with him since we started with him in the spring of 2017. So the fact that he finally switched into our iron, which honestly it looked like Mount Everest when we started, like how we're ever going to get there based on, you know, how picky he is with all the details and everything.
Sure.
But to get there and then seeing him basically play with a full bag of TaylorMade clubs was incredible. And again, like I said, I speak on behalf of the whole team here, the R&D, the designers, everybody. I mean, that was a pretty cool feeling. And I, you know, I don't want to take any credit in saying, like, well, we helped him win, but to me, that is just puts the chair on top of his victory that he had the club that we worked on in the back.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, that is Mr. Tomo Biestad. He is the Senior Director of Product Creation over at TaylorMade Golf. Tomo, I really enjoyed speaking with you. I hope we could do it again soon. Listeners, go out and buy a Gapper. You're going to really benefit from it. TaylorMade.com is where you need to go. Tomo, we'll do this again soon.
Absolutely, man. Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it. It was really fun.